And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host for today. For Michaela Goad, the past week has been a whirlwind. Everyone wanting to talk to her about her Randolph Caldecott Medal for Best Children's Story. Her watercolors brought the book We Are Water Protectors to life, and Michaela is the first Native American to win this award. So Michaela joins us now from beautiful Sitka. How's the weather there today?
Hi, well, it is snowing today for the first time in a very long time, so it feels finally like winter a little bit.
Well, if you were here, you would not be able to see anything. The snow that's coming down, it has left a lot of, there's a lot of poor visibility out there. Hope people will be careful out there driving. But What prompted your move to Sitka?
Well, it was back in the early last year. My partner, Zach Anderson, he started the brewery Harbor Mountain Brewing Company here in Sitka. And so it was just about the beginning of when all the pandemic craziness was starting. And so we just sort of just moved to Sitka really quickly because we weren't sure how much longer we had, or we didn't know if moving would be extra difficult later. So we moved back in April, and we're focused on getting the brewery up and running and moving amidst the pandemic from a remote spot out in Amalga and Juneau there to another remote island. So it was quite the adventure last year. But we've been here for, it'll be a year in April, which is crazy. And we love it.
Well, you know, the adventure continues for you because, you know, within just a few weeks, you've won accomplished two amazing things that are very coveted, such as having a doodle, so to speak, a Google doodle featured that went all over the world, and then, of course, this book award. But I want to roll the clock back a little bit because one of the things I read about you is that you had sort of this idyllic studio in Juneau when you were here that was sort of the settings for all these beautiful watercolors. Can you describe that studio?
Yeah, so we moved around a few times in Juneau, but eventually we were so lucky to find ourselves out at Amalga Harbor, just in an amazing community out there. And through a friend, we met Denise Chase, who is just a really special person to us now. And she let us live out in her property in this beautiful cabin, and she graciously let me take over her shed and convert it into a studio. And it was just this beautiful spot right next to the ocean, in the trees. And it was really peaceful. Not many folks out there, or not many neighbors even. So I think I spent at the longest stretch about 21 days out there working on this particular book, We Are Water Protectors, without going into town, which was only possible because my partner was going into town almost every day. But yeah, it was a really beautiful, magical spot. And I got to work on, I think, paintings for two books there. And they'll always be extra special for that reason.
So you think you channeled your environment into those drawings?
I definitely think so. And I think in most of my work, just channeling Southeast in general and just a childhood spent in Southeast Alaska, that's just been really, really formative. As a person, I think a lot of people can relate to that in Southeast Alaska. It leaves its mark on you. And it has definitely found its way into my work.
Which makes everyone so excited because it's getting national recognition. And so In some ways, they're seeing the beauty of Southeast Alaska reflected in your work, which everybody here takes special pride in and joy.
Oh, yeah.
So I would like to also kind of get a sense of how these seeds get planted and how they grow. So when did you get approached to work on the book, We Are Water Protectors?
I think I was approached back in the summer of 2018. And I think Yeah, it was summer of 2018, and we started talks with the editor and publisher at Roaring Brook Press. And I think one thing that surprises a lot of people, because it certainly surprised me when I started out in this industry, is just how long the publishing timelines work. Just the publishing pipeline is very layered, and it can take a long time. So I'm not quite sure when Carol Lindstrom, the author, started writing the book. But I know she was inspired by the events at Standing Rock in 2016. So I think she just worked on it between those years. And when they called me in 2018 to see if I'd be interested in working on it. And I started paintings, I think, in January or February, right about now, 2 years ago, 2019.
So here we are. So tell us a little bit about Carol Lindstrom. And did you have a chance to collaborate with her much, or did they pretty much say, here's the story, now come up with the images?
Let's see. So in more traditional publishing, it's more like, here you go, here's the manuscript, and you have your art director and your editor, and there's lots of early conversations. And then you are just sort of left to go brainstorm and generate all these ideas and sketches, and you go through the sketchboard or the sketching and dummy process. But for this story, I reached out to Carol and had several great conversations with her, and just to touch base with her and learn about her and where she comes from and her inspiration for the story, as well as, trying to find some resources and directions that she could point me in so that I wasn't just a little lost. You know, this story has a lot of important context and meaning. And so I was just hoping to get as much from her as I could beforehand. And Carol is from the Turtle Mountain Ojibwe Band. And her lived experience is much different than mine. And one thing I've found as, an Indigenous illustrator is a lot of people think that just because I'm Tlingit, I'll know what it is to be an Ojibwe person or to have that Ojibwe experience, which is definitely not the case. So while there are a lot of, bonds and common themes that I've found through my relationships with these different Indigenous authors, I still like to reach out and become friends with them as much as possible and learn from them first.
So did you find a bond with Carol Lindstrom?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
And what was that bond?
Well, we're really, really great friends now. And we love to do events together, and we love to talk and chat and hang out. And we were able to spend some time together over the last several years before last year happened, just at various conferences. So she's one of my really great friends now, and she's kind of like an auntie. She's a little bit older, but she's a wonderful person.
So the Standing Rock controversy, we sort of know from protests and headlines, and it's not something that I guess you think of as being visually beautiful. And yet, the beauty of water is something we all share. Was that something that brought you and Carol together?
I'm sure. Well, it was her story that was based on Standing Rock. And you're right, there was a challenge of trying to depict a heavier or more somber subject matter in a picture book for children. And so we had early conversations with the editor and the art director, because some of my early sketches showed, the military guard or the private security detail and like their attack dogs or something like that. But it didn't feel quite right. And I wanted to focus on the water protectors themselves and the power and the resilience and the love that was there in that community, as well as just the diversity within that community, because there are over 500 Indigenous nations from around the world were represented there. And so that was historic in and of itself. And so I really wanted to speak to that diversity. With picture books, you only get so many pages to tell this complete story. So I did want to focus on the water protectors, who they were and who they still are, and who they're fighting for.
For those of us who haven't seen your book yet, can you tell us about the water protectors?
Just the Standing Rock water protectors.
Right. Who are the water protectors in your book?
Well, like we said, it's Standing Rock. The stand is Standing Rock back in 2016. They were protesting the North Dakota or the Dakota Access Pipeline from going through their sacred burial grounds and going through their river or underneath their river because they didn't want their water to be poisoned. It would affect not only them, but everyone downstream. And the process was rushed and they weren't consulted. And they'd had enough at that point. And so the camp was actually begun, I believe it was called Sacred Stone Camp, by youth activists, youth young water protectors. And they ran to Washington to raise awareness. And then the camp just grew as more and more people started learning about the injustices there. People came to support and to support in protest and peace. It was nonviolent. And there was a strong emphasis on peace. So they were brutalized by the opposing forces, the private guard, the military guards, by water guns, rubber bullets, attack dogs. I'm forgetting other things.
Well, when I ask you who are the water protectors, who are they in the community? Are they professional activists? Who are they?
Oh, I think they're everyone. I don't think there's one category of person that fits water protector. I'm sure it's your more professional activist, but it's also youth, elders, anyone who cares for our environment. And I think that's the energy in the movement that we started to see there, is that this isn't just something that should be relegated to those professional activists. This affects everybody, and everyone needs to answer this call. And so I don't think there's any one demographic or one category within that, and that's part of the beauty and the power, I think.
So there are a lot of children's books with Native American themes, Native American stories, but most of them aren't written by American Indians or by Native American writers. So people make a lot of your winning this award and being part of this project. What is it that you think being Tlingit brought to this, even though it was another culture?
Well, like I said earlier, I think across, Turtle Island or across the different Native nations we have here, there's often a kinship based on our connection to land. And so although the cultures and the language and the histories differ, there's often at the core of who we are as Native people is a love for the land, and land is central to identity. And here, in Southeast Alaska, being Tlingit, we're people of the tides. And that was particularly fitting for this book that was really focusing on water. And so just growing up in the rainforests and on the water, on the ocean here, I think it felt right. I thought I could bring in a lot of the love for our natural world. And I chose to focus more on that. I wanted the art to sing with life and have a lot of spirit, and that's something people could connect to emotionally, no matter their background or where they come from. Native and non-native, I think that hits us all really deeply. This love for land and wanting to protect Mother Earth, and I think right now more than ever that is a very important theme.
Well, Juno was fertile soil for you growing up. I mean, I'm sure many seeds were planted here. And a lot of times, we have things happen to us in life, and we look back and we realize, wow, this fed into this and that fed into that. Is that the case for you, having grown up in Juneau and practiced your craft first here?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I mean, just from a young age, I was involved in lots of art programs in town, and Juneau is such an art-friendly and art-supportive community. And whether it was you know, teacher artists coming into our classroom, like Nancy Lane Hart when I was at Ock Bay Elementary and teaching us all sorts of crafts, or Miss Boochiever, Annie Boochiever, teaching us all sorts of different multicultural songs and musicals and elementary school to arts programs and Sitka Fine Arts Camp and all sorts of programs that I was involved in over the years. And then when I was, 5 years ago, that's when I got involved with the Alaska Heritage Institute, when they put out a call for proposals for their Baby Raven Reads program, which is an amazing grant-funded literacy program aimed at our tribe, you know, Native stories by Native people for Native people. And I was lucky enough to start on a few picture books with them and ended up doing 4. And I feel like we all learned a lot together. And really, that was sort of like an incubation time where I got to learn what it was to make picture books. And I never used watercolor, even though I'd you know, had a lifetime of the arts and went to school for art or college for art. And so I just got to learn watercolor as a medium, and to feel like not a huge number of people were watching, so I didn't get overly stressed out or psych myself out too much. And then it was just sort of stepping stones. And eventually one of those books got a little bit more recognition, Shanyaku Bloch, Salmon Boy. And then from there, it just went to the bigger publishing world.
Boy, I was captivated by your Tide Lady and the story that's there. That was my first experience seeing your artwork. Is it a calling to do children's books?
I think, you know, I didn't set out for this career path or plan for it. Looking back, I guess, you know, hindsight, it makes a lot of sense. I was always enamored by world building and felt really drawn to things like animated movies and even video games and just all sorts of fantastical books. And I love to read, and I tried out lots of different theater, and, you know, set design. I thought about that, but didn't really want to draft and measure and things like that. And then I thought about production design for film, but I didn't want to have to live out of Alaska, and illustration for animation. So, you know, I always collected picture books too, even though I didn't have kids or even nephews at that point. So I felt really drawn to picture books. I think they have the power to stick with us, which is one thing I find really wonderful about them. And you can get something, a great picture book, you can get something from it no matter how old you are.
That's right, when you're a parent, reading them to your kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like as a picture book maker, you're usually trying to layer in different meanings that, you know, even the youngest can speak to the youngest, but then adults will also take something away from it as well.
Well, those books do have a long shelf life in our personal lives. I mean, all of us have books that are dear to us. And So I think it takes something special, some thought, because you're writing something or drawing something that could be used for generations, a part of someone's life. Did that occur to you?
It didn't at first. It started to sink in a little bit more, actually, with We Are Water Protectors, just starting to see how widely that book was being embraced, and starting to see all the photos of people sharing the book, sharing themselves with the book or their children, and hearing stories from different parents or caregivers and their experiences with the book. And it did sort of start to sink in that, oh yeah, this book, like the books have the power to make this impression, this lasting impression, and to think that one day when they're adults, they might remember this book and how it sort of spoke to them at the right time and in the right way when they're a child. Like, that's a really, really wonderful feeling.
So the Google Doodle, though, was not for children, or maybe it was for children at heart. I don't know. But you use some of the same colors and some of the same style to do a beautiful image of Elizabeth Paratovich with eagle wings.
Yes, thank you.
How did that project start?
Mm-hmm. That one began back in the late summer of this past year, and a woman named Sophie from Google Doodle Team just reached out to me in email and just asked if I would be interested in working on something that they had in the works. And they couldn't tell me what it was until I signed a non-disclosure agreement. And then once we got past that, we were able to figure out how to get this doodle out there. It was really exciting to then hear the subject, Elizabeth Bradovich. And I just thought it was the coolest thing that she was going to be Google Doodle and that I would get to help bring it to life.
You know, just in wrapping things up, and we're also going to be talking with Rico Worrell shortly, who has a stamp that's going to go out later this year.
Yeah.
That it seems like this is a time when Native art is getting attention. Do you think that it's the authenticity of it, perhaps?
It's hard to say. You know, people say that within publishing, too. The thing is that Native stories and Native artwork has always been there, and it's always been incredibly powerful and beautiful. There is a shift, I think, in the wider, like for publishing, more and more publishing houses are starting to hear and listen to these conversations saying that, you know, we need greater inclusivity and diversity within this publishing industry. We need more of these creators and we need to support them. And so there have been a big, strong movement in recent years. And I'm lucky to be coming into the publishing industry right now. From what I've been told, it was different even about 5 years ago, 5 to 10 years ago. So it's happening rapidly at this larger stage, which is a great thing. And I'm standing on many shoulders that have helped pave the way for it. And it's really exciting to see, especially if it spans industries and it's not just publishing, but it's, you know, stamps. I think that's so cool.
It is so cool. And it's a beautiful stamp. I can't wait to see it and actually have my hands on it.
I'm going to buy so many.
It's a forever stamp, too. So, But anyway, before we move on here, I want to point out that you are in your new studio in Sitka, still a work in progress as you grow
yes.
into it. So tell us about that and what you plan to do next in this studio once you get settled in and deal with
yeah.
all the things that you have to deal with.
It's really exciting. I haven't had an external studio space like this before. Beyond like my nearby shed studio that I had for a while. But I've always just been in tiny little cramped bedrooms, just bursting at the seams. So now I have this big, big room on the Sheldon Jackson campus, which also feels really neat because this is where my grandma went to boarding school. And so sometimes I wonder if she was in this room or what. But it feels like coming full circle in one way. And I'm excited to grow in this space and be able to do more printing and packaging and to just painting, of course, more books, but just actually have room to do it in and actually be able to bring on some help sometimes if I need it.
So there's a wonderful summer fine arts camp for young people there. You think you might be a part of that?
Well, I was possibly going to teach this year, but with the Caldecott now, I'm not quite sure how it will all pan out. But I do actually need to vacate the studio for the time of Sitka Fine Arts Camp, so that will be tricky.
But you were a student of that camp as well, right?
Yeah, I went for one summer back when I was maybe 15 or so. And I might have actually painted in this room, which is kind of crazy to think about. But yeah, I loved theater and painting and drawing, so I got to do all of that and piano here. It's a wonderful camp, and it's just incredible the caliber of professional artists that they come here or that come here to teach.
It is an amazing campus, and I just enjoy visiting there and seeing all the TLC, all the volunteers, and the people in the community that come to make that camp, you know, so mm-hmm. successful. So mm-hmm. I'm so glad you're there, bringing all those good vibes there.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Michaela. I so much enjoyed hearing about all your work. But just I forgot to ask, though, mm-hmm. is what's your next project before we go?
Well, I have another book coming out in April I Seeing You Down from the Stars. It's a picture book written by a Cree Trinidadian woman up in Canada named Tasha Spillett Sumner. And her text is just beautiful. And that book comes out in April, I Seeing You Down from the Stars. And then I'm about to begin paintings on my author-illustrator debut picture book, which won't come out until next summer, summer of 2022. And that one is called Berry Song. And it's based, it's based on berry picking and foraging, but just essentially uses that as a vehicle to speak to love for land and place here in Southeast Alaska. So I think it will speak to a lot of folks around here. I hope so.
Oh, I think it will. You say berries and it's like a magic word to people. Yeah. All right. Thanks so much, Michaela Goad.
Thank you so much.